see that your body is completely relaxed. Scan through your body from head to feet. Any resistance, any reacting? All of you can sit as you feel comfortable. And if you wish, you can keep your eyes open. We will have our Dhamma discussion. Day is over. More day left before we finish this retreat. One more day to fully practice. And of course there's one more day which is half a day. But then from the morning itself the mind is already packing. Starts packing. And then once you start packing your bag, you pack everything also. So that is why we have only one more day, serious day tomorrow, to practice. Understanding how the mind works, how the mind is reacting. The more you start understanding the mind, the more you start to understand life. You have seen how wild the mind can be, reacting, fighting, quarreling, doing all kinds of things. And if you understand how difficult, how complicated the mind is, then don't sow the seed of impurities after this retreat and during this retreat. As I told you, whatever good or bad you do, it creates an impression on the mind. And the more good impressions you make, the more you develop in meditation. The more bad impressions you make, the less you progress in meditation. And meditation is not just about sitting, closed eyes, like a stone statue. And meditation is not just about walking like a tortoise. Of course, in a retreat like this, you are asked to slow down all your actions and slow down. There is a reason for it. In our life, we are so fast, running, rushing, pushing. The society is like this today. And when you come to a retreat, you say, slow down, slow down. And then what happens? Of course, the mind is as active as it is before. But physically, if you slow down, you sit down quietly, and then you slow your walking, then what happens? Slowly the mind gets conditioned. Oh, slow down. And in a retreat, when the teacher or the guide says, slow down all your actions, of course, you have no choice but to slow down. In a normal day life, if somebody says, slow down, you say, you shut up. But in a retreat like this, some respect is there for the teacher. Some regards is there for the teacher. And moreover, this teacher has come all the way from India. Some respect is there. So he says, slow down. You can't just run. So you are forced in a way to slow down. Good. And I've seen most of you were trying your best to slow down. I could feel some of you want to just stop it and just run about, you know, just walk fast, walk normal, what is it? These reactions were coming. I could feel a little bit here, a little bit there. But still, you tried good. And now you will find even the mind is slowing down. Mind is becoming more calm, more quiet, more calm, more quiet. Why? As you slow down your actions and the mind gets all the space to work. Otherwise, physically, if you're fast, running here, pushing there, doing this, doing that, 100 things at a time, then there is no space. Mind gets so occupied, there is no space for the mind to work. And that is why slowly and slowly, by now all of you looks much more calm than the first 2-3 days. Then the first 2-3 days, I always start thinking, who is going to pack the bag? Or who is having a big difficult time? Usually what happens is, in the first days, which is even the first day itself, some people come to me, Vivek, I'm very sorry, you know, I feel this meditation is not for me. But I try to tell them, hey, look, if it is not for you, just try. It is only 2 days. In our place, we do every weekend, there is a retreat. Just 2 days. Can you not be silent for 2 days? No. This is not my cup of coffee. So they leave. Even 1 day retreat is finished, even the first day finished, by the end, they leave. Because you have to sit quietly, calm down. Doesn't work. This is the reaction it starts. Of course, even here, the same thing, first day, revolting, reaction, what is this, doubts, confusions, all the enemies eating you everywhere, outside, inside, the enemies are pushing you all around, and you are totally confused what to do. But you have passed the examination. Now there is very less chance for you to run away. I wouldn't be surprised if I get a writing saying that, Vivek, could you stay 4 days more? Or 5 days more, could we extend the retreat? Not a big surprise. Now, slowly, all these wonderful thoughts starts developing in the mind. Thought of working positively. Yeah, I know, now it works. You see, this is coming. All these wonderful things starts coming up in the mind. And very less of resistance, fighting, negativity will start coming. Very less. More positive as the day progresses. Understand, as you start observing the mind without reacting with hate, ignorance, and all kinds of things, now what happens? You will start generating love and compassion for oneself. You start befriending the mind, you start befriending yourself, then there will be so much of love and compassion for oneself. Not only that. Now if you see somebody doing something which seems to be disturbing, you will be like compassion for this person, not reacting. Hey, look, that's stupid. He doesn't know what to do. What is he doing? This reaction immediately will not start now. Of course, during the retreat. But once the retreat is finished, who knows? Because the real world is something else. It is so easy to be in a retreat and then be so peaceful and quiet. Because the condition is there. And not only the condition, the whole energy support is there. We are here like 70 or 80 people sitting here, so everybody doing the smallest, the same thing, everybody knows what he or she is doing. So where is the chance for you to be wild? Very less chance. But the real world is very different. Meditating in a meditation retreat like this and experiencing wonderful things and you do perfect meditation is not the real meditation. The real meditation only comes when you go back home. If you can practice in daily life exactly what you are doing, if you can change this into active daily life, then only you are meditating. Then only you can say, I meditated well. Oh yes, I got benefit out of it. Tomorrow I'll be speaking all about how to integrate all these practices in your daily life. We will analyze the life tomorrow. But understand, there are few things to be understood as a meditator. Meditation, as I told you, is not just about sitting and walking, coming to a retreat. People keep on doing retreats. And in retreats, we keep on saying, don't develop attachment. People fall in love with retreats. And then strong attachment to retreats. I've done this retreat, that retreat, this long list of retreats. With this Baba, that Baba, this Vivek Baba. So many Baba retreats you have done. One more Vivek also. So what? This is how it starts. Attachment to it. Be careful. When unpleasant things arise, of course, you have to work, observe it. But when pleasant things start arising, it is very difficult to observe, mind you. You can easily get trapped into these so-called wonderful feelings. And that is why many people keep on going retreats for what? Just to have that wonderful feeling. And for them, that wonderful feeling is the meditation. So they keep on going retreats after retreats, retreats after retreats. Doesn't work. Whenever there is a pleasant feeling, also you must understand, this will also change. Then wisdom arises. This will also change. Now when you understand change, well, life is changing constantly. How can you keep on hating somebody? No question. How can you keep on saying all kinds of unwholesome, immoral things, or do, or even speak? Well, when you know life is so uncertain, how can you just waste your time doing all this? Understand, the Buddha says, you must understand, first of all, what is good and what is bad. Of course, Buddha pointed out, these are 10 unwholesome things. Don't do this. If you do this, it creates a very negative impression on the mind and you cannot meditate. The mind gets polluted all the time. Constantly you're polluting the mind if you do this. But then there are 10 wonderful things. If you develop or if you practice these 10 wonderful things, wholesome things, then that creates a very strong impression on the mind, and then you can easily start developing the mind. These things supports your developing the mind. Let us analyze. What are these? Let us see what, according to Buddha, in a very gross language, you can say bad things, but unwholesome things. If you do these things, the result is going to be horrible. What are these? These are divided into physical action, verbal action, and mental action. Now the physical action. The Buddha says not to harm or hurt any living beings whatsoever. And as soon as I say living beings, suddenly you start thinking big animals like this, elephants, or like we shouldn't shoot, or these kind of gross things. But killing means any living beings that is visible to your human eye. Any living beings that you can see through your eyes. Not go into that extreme. Like in India, we have certain religious practices where people go into too much extreme. They cover their mouth, saying that when you breathe in, bacteria goes in and you're killing so many bacteria. And then, when they walk, they take a broom saying that if I walk, I'll kill so many insects, so keep on sweeping the floor when you walk. Extreme. It all depends on your mind. The Buddha says not to harm or hurt with this intention to destroy somebody's life. Then. And if you have to cover your mouth, then why do you eat anyway? Stop eating. Just fast and die if you think you are going to kill something. These are too extreme. Buddha says, don't go into extreme, follow the middle path. Understand? Middle path, not extreme. On the other hand, whenever you get an opportunity, you try to save life. When I was in Thailand, my mother-in-law, she one day came with a, looks like a tennis racket. You know tennis racket? You play tennis? Looks like a tennis racket. I thought, what, mother-in-law is going to go play tennis somewhere. And then suddenly after some time I saw, she presses the button and does like this. I thought, hey, what's happening? And suddenly I realized that she was killing mosquito with this one. It was a mosquito killing racket, not a tennis racket. And then suddenly my wife whispered to mother-in-law, hey, look, Vivek does not kill. Oh, mother-in-law says, oh, very sorry, very sorry. She keeps the badminton racket or whatever it is on the side. I'm very sorry. But mosquitoes are bound to come. They come, have to come, and suddenly there is mosquitoes in the room. Mother-in-law is mother-in-law. She's very sweet mother-in-law. And as soon as the mosquito comes, she says, hey mosquitoes, go to Vivek. And she drives them. Vivek does not kill. You go to him. Don't come to me, I'm going to kill you. This is what happens. And we are Buddhists. We claim to be Buddha's followers. And yet, we take this racket and start doing this. And then I started telling, mother-in-law starts understanding, hey, why is it does not kill? And I say, well, look, five precepts. Buddha says, not to harm or hurt any living being. How can you? And slowly she started to understand. Of course, slowly she started asking me, what do you do, meditation? Because Buddhists themselves doesn't know what meditation is, unfortunately. What to talk about killing or whatever it is. Whatever, even a little insect. After all, I think Israeli mosquitoes are more compassionate than the Indian mosquitoes. Why? Because at least the mosquitoes in Israel doesn't seem to bring any sort of, what do you call, malaria or malaria, whatever it is. Yeah, whatever it is. And you're lucky. You're sure there is no malaria or whatever. So what is harm in sharing a little blood from your body? After all, it gives you an opportunity to observe eating. Thanks to the mosquitoes. In India, they keep telling me, but Vivek, mosquitoes bring malaria and I could die. Well, there is always preventive measures. The solution is not always to kill the mosquito, poor mosquitoes. Understand this. Not to harm or hurt any living beings. When you kill any living beings, you cannot kill living beings with love and compassion. You only can kill with so much of hate or anger or whatever it is. Then only you can perform this action. Now imagine when you kill any living beings, imagine the impressions that you make on your mind. And that is what you carry. This hate builds up slowly and slowly. This hate to kill builds up slowly and slowly. And people are so full of hate to kill something, and people become so outrageous when the anger comes up, they just kill people even like this. And suddenly they go to jail and police ask, why did you kill? He says, I don't know. We don't know, we're so overwhelmed by this hate. That is why, even if it is a little insect, flies or whatever it is, just don't try, don't kill intentionally. By accident, if you step on something, that's a different story. Then you don't have that intention to kill. It makes only the impression when you do it consciously with this impression, I will hurt and harm living beings. That is the thing. Try to practice this. After all, Buddha says, if you start not killing but saving life, it's a wonderful quality. You start developing. When you see any living beings, you must tell the living beings, every living beings have equal right to live on this planet, on this earth, as much as you have the right to live. You don't want anybody to come and kill you, do you? Then why do you want to kill others? Just that because you are a bit stronger and more clever, intelligent, so-called, you can just kill something? Oh no. Every living being has fear to die. Every living being does not want to die. So don't try to kill, because when you kill, strong energy is coming to you, this killing instinct. So from today onwards, if you feel, only if you feel, it is not a commandment, if you feel, oh yes, wonderful, how can I kill living beings? Then try to save, try not to kill as much as possible. Then the second physical action is not to take anything that does not belong to you. In a very gross English, you can say stealing. What can you steal? I see most of you have enough clothes, enough things to eat and whatever. I don't know if there is any need to kill. If it is a very poor country, then you can say, oh, there is a lot of poverty, he has got so much, I don't have, I'm starving to death, so you start stealing. Again, you have to start consciously developing this, to be very aware that you dare not take anything with this intention, again, to harm or hurt somebody. You, with this intention, you say, all right, I'll deprive him of this one and let him suffer. If you do this, then imagine how much of negativity is developing in the mind. On the other hand, you start developing the mind of sharing. Forget about taking, giving, giving all the time. You will not lose anything by sharing. You will only gain. Usually in traditional Buddhist countries, they say that the more you give, the more you receive. And because they believe that, a lot of people give it with this idea, I'll get it. But I don't think so in your country you will do this. You will start thinking, all right, if I give this, what happens, what not happens, and all this calculation starts. But remember, this mind of sharing is a great quality. How can you ever take something from somebody which does not belong to you? Now, if you renounce, if you start sharing, then look, even if somebody tries to take something from you, yet he will not succeed, or yet you will get robbed. People keep telling me, threatening me, of course you must be also hearing in India, pickpockets are there, this in train, this is, they steal in the rope, they cheat you, this do, that do, so many fears are there, so many people don't even come to India because they keep hearing all these things. And people keep telling me also the same thing. I tell myself, doesn't matter. I will walk and keep my things as it is. I don't mind if somebody wants to steal. So I've never been robbed. People keep telling me I was robbed, my this bag, that bag, my bag was torn like this. If you develop, if you open your mind, then look, miracles happen sometimes. In Burma, it is a tradition that whenever you go to any monasteries, you take off your shoes. In Buddhist countries mostly, you take off your shoes before you enter a monastery, like you here put off your shoes here. One day, me and few of our classmates, we went to this temple, one of the temples in Burma. And whenever I enter any temples, for me it's very clear. I leave my shoes, let's say if everybody leaves the shoes here, I leave it somewhere behind. And whenever I leave my shoes behind, I tell in my mind, I say, if anybody takes my shoe from my side, it's a donation. Mm-hmm. So when I leave my shoes, I tell myself, all right, if somebody takes, for me it is not stealing. Maybe for him it is stealing, but from my side it is a donation. So I leave my shoes and go to the temple. Now, one day, one of my friends, international bank manager, retired guy, in my class, doing the same study in Buddhist studies, we went to this temple. And as usual, I took my shoes off and I started walking. And suddenly, he took off his shoes and started taking in his hand. I said, what are you doing? He said, no, I don't want to lose my shoe. It's not a very expensive shoe, but anyway, he was so attached to his shoe, he said, I know, I don't want to lose my shoe, so I take it with me in the temple. But I said, look, why take it? Nobody will take it, you just leave it there. Why are you afraid? No, I don't want to take chance. I said, all right, then you are happy, you take it. So we went into this temple, we meditated for half an hour. He kept his shoe very close to himself. After half an hour, when we woke up, his shoe is gone. His shoe is stolen from the temple. And he was looking for his shoe. I said, what happened? My shoe is gone. I said to him, if you would have left your shoe outside with this, let go of your shoes, your shoes would not have been taken, would not have been stolen. Since you brought it in the temple, look, even people can steal in the temple. So when we went out, I said, look, my shoe will be there. And I saw in a far distance, my shoe is still safe there. This is what happens. You just develop this mind of sharing, letting go. Not all the time, this, this, this. then what happens if those people who have this mind of taking or stealing your things, they get attracted. So you, from your side, your mind should always be positive and positive. If you have a positive mind, then the positive energy gets attracted. If you develop negative mind, then a negative energy comes. Try to develop this mind of sharing in your life as much as possible. Don't, how can you just think of, you just forget about taking things which does not belong to you. And then the last physical action is not to commit any sexual, unlawful sexual misconduct. This is also a wonderful quality, but remember, because of the sexual misconduct, kingdoms fell. There were huge wars just because of sexuality. You look into the history. One king fought another king for what? All connected with sexuality. Understand that if you understand the responsibility, then of course, Buddha never denied not to have sexual relationship. He only said unlawful sexual misconduct or unlawful sexual relationship. What is the meaning? If you are married or if you are living together, as I spoke, then you remain loyal to each other. Commit yourself completely and remain loyal to each other, and the rest of the people, you start saying, alright, they are my brothers and sisters. Now, let's say, of course, we are not enlightened beings. You look at somebody, sexual thought comes, and then you tell yourself, hey, look, I have my own responsibilities. And then you start looking, look, what is this craving is there? Craving attachment is there to lust. Attachment is there. Don't try to develop this. Buddha says, if you keep on jumping from this person to that person to that person to this person, you are multiplying your passion, your lust. And then you become slave to this. There is no satisfaction whatsoever. Supposing if you have a relationship now and say, alright, this. And then suddenly you see somebody else, you feel like, ah, he's very nice. But the same thing, some weaknesses is there, then the same person, what is the guarantee that this person is better than the other person? So try to develop this sense of brotherhood or sisterhood whenever you look at others, if you are in a relationship. Be loyal to each other. Already having one partner is a big problem. And then you have 10 problems, how much of tension in the head? I know some of my friends who are so proud that they have so many relationships. Ah, they say, I have 50 relationships. Or somebody says, what, 50 only? I'm crossing century. But do you know how much tension they have? They keep coming to me, Vivek, I want to talk to you. Hey, what happened to you? You know, I have my girlfriend, and then, you know, I met this, and then I met this, and then I met this, and then the appointment is there to one, and to one flattering is there, you know, tomorrow I'm very busy, we'll meet today, and tomorrow actually has an appointment with another one, and then another one. So much of tension, and then taking pills for this tension, for that tension, so many pills. Why all this tension? Just be happy with one person and deal with that person. It is much better than spreading out to so many people. And your mind becomes obsessed with lustful thoughts. Now these are the three physical actions the Buddha says, if you do this, you will harm others and you harm yourself also. So don't do these actions if you feel it is unwholesome for you. This is what the Buddha points out. Then the Buddha says there are four verbal actions. Again, if you do this, they are bad, unwholesome. If you do this, again the impression that creates on the mind is horrible. It makes person very miserable. The first one is, Buddha says, lying. Always telling lies with this intention to harm or hurt others. And we know how much of problem are there in the world today just because of lying. Keep on telling lies, keep on making promises which has no meaning, keep on telling lies, and if you do that, you're creating so much of bad impression on the mind. But on the other hand, you start developing this mind of telling the truth. Truth all the time. And people keep asking me, but what about white lying? Is it wrong to tell white lie or black lie or whatever? I also didn't know there was white lie and black lie. And then somebody explained, so I could imagine what it means. Alright, give you one example. In India, usually there are a lot of people, you know, a lot of people who wants to grab your money, or because for Ladakhis, when we go to India, we automatically we are like tourists. Because you see my face doesn't look like Indian. And when they ask me, where are you from? I say, I'm from Ladakh. They say, oh, is that in China? Indians. And it's a big hassle. So always they try to cheat us, thinking we are tourists. Anyway, once I was coming from Calcutta, Bangkok to Calcutta, and immediately at the airport I got cheated. And then I thought, I immediately started reflecting, oh my gosh, these people are going to cheat, and they are generating so much of negative things in the mind by cheating, by looking at this person. So I thought to myself, how should I get rid of these people, and how can I help these people not to commit this, and also save myself and save them also. So I cooked up some story. They said, where are you from, sir? And of course, I was in a very business outfit. I said, I'm from Kargil. And everybody knows Kargil because of the India-Pakistan war. And it's 200 kilometers from Leh. So I said, I'm from Kargil. And there are army soldiers from all over India in Kargil, posted in Kargil. So they said, oh sir, you're from Kargil? So do you know about the war in Pakistan? Very curious, Indians. I said, yes, of course. What do you do, sir? I'm in the Indian army. I tell him, I'm from the Indian army. And suddenly, once you say Indian army, there is all salutes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They can't even think of cheating you. So this is some of the games that I play, but my intention is not to harm this person by telling this lie. But you can also think for yourself. You have to act in the time, when the time demands, in which way you have to act, but make sure that your intention is not to harm or hurt any other person. Then there is no harm. I don't feel guilty that I do this, because I'm laughing inside, because I'm just trying to avoid him doing some unwholesome things. That is the intention. Then the other thing the Buddha says is backbiting. Keep on backbiting all the time, talking about this person, he's like this, he's like that, he's like this. All the time talking about somebody else's negativity, somebody else's property, somebody else's dress, somebody else's how he looks, how she looks, all the time talking about this person, that person, this person. Buddha says, if you do keep on doing this talking all the time, very unproductive talk, it does not bring any benefit. Don't do this. Of course, once in a while we have to do a little bit of here, a little bit of discussion here, but not that the whole time, whenever you meet, you keep on saying, that man, you know, that person, you know, all the time backbiting. And another one is keep on gossiping all about all useless things, about all kinds of gossiping, about persons, about, and you know, nowadays, televisions, radios, adds to your gossiping. So much of gossiping, waste of time. So much of waste of time is there, no benefit. And you keep on gossiping, what happens? Hate comes, anger comes, jealousy comes. And then another one is always doing vain talk, frivolous talk, all these useless talks. When, let's say, you meet, one time you can talk about, hey, what's your name, where are you from, how is your country, this country, that country. And you meet second day, you meet third day, see, keep on talking, how much did you pay for this t-shirt, where did you buy this, where did you buy that, how much does it cost, how much this cost. Keep on talking all kinds of vain talks, no productive talk in it. And if you're doing that constantly, then you're wasting your life. You're wasting so much of energy. People keep telling me, is there anything wrong in brain talk? Brain talk, we connect ourselves. Of course, initially you do some brain talks to connect yourself. In a society when we live, we have to do a little bit of talk here and there, but not that you spend your whole life doing all kinds of brain talks. And then harsh languages, using harsh language. Harsh language is one of the big problem makers. You use all abusive languages, all names and these and that. And you know, there are any number of words. I don't want to use any of these words. To me, at the age of 6, I stopped using all these harsh languages. You know, in Ladakh, when the army started coming, they brought with them all these wonderful harsh languages, and you know army language. All using abusive languages, very harsh languages. I don't know how they can use it. But anyway, since we were a child, we adapted all these harsh languages from Hindi language, and it's not Ladakh even. Hindi languages. And it doesn't, we don't know what's the meaning, but when I get angry, then I use this word. That much I know, that I have to say this word when I get angry, not knowing what the meaning is. At the age of 6, when I started going to school, when we had fights, we'd say, you this, you this, you this, without knowing the meaning, you this, but full of anger, you this, you this. And suddenly one of our teacher, who was a Ladakhi, he started understanding this. How can this boy say this, this, this? And he went and translated all these abusive languages to our teacher, saying that he's saying like this, he's saying like this. Such things that you can't even imagine. And then, one day the teacher in front of me, I thought she doesn't know like any other time. I said this very harsh language and she knew what I said it. And then she said, took a stick, said, put your tongue out. I said, very afraid, 6 years old boy, very afraid, put your tongue out, and very reluctantly put my tongue out. She took a little spoon and brought some dog shit from somewhere and said, now I'll put this dog shit on your tongue. And in our tradition, dog shit is considered to be the worst shit. Shit of the shits. But which shit is the worst shit, you know that. Anyway, they brought it very close, saying that now we put the shit on your tongue because your mouth is as shitty as this shit. I was like this, because for us, even to see a dog shit, it means it will bring very bad luck or this or that. Now she's going to put it on my tongue. I thought, finish, I'm dead. And I was shivering, I was like crying, I was saying sorry, all kinds of things were going on. And then suddenly I was spared. They didn't put it. They said, next time you ever use this harsh language, we'll put this shit on your tongue. From that day until today, all the harsh languages just vanished from my mouth. Like after 6 years, I went to Ladakh. And then my friends, like jokingly, hey, you this. And I'm like, how can you say this word? Like all these words, very dirty words, harsh words, even to use with a joke, for me it was like, how can they use this? Of course, initially, it was out of fear that I stopped using it, but slowly when I started to understand, started to meditate, then only I realized how horrible these words are, how horrible these languages are, and how much of negativity it creates in my mind, and not only in my mind, in the other person, because when I say this, there is full of negativity in the mind. Keep aside all these harsh languages. Now as a meditator, you have so many wonderful languages to use. Good languages. If you get angry also, calm down, and then use some good languages. Develop a habit to use good languages, not all the time bad languages. By the way, Hollywood gives you enough of all these harsh languages also. And Indians are very quickly in adapting all these kind of words now. But for me, even to use as a joke, I've given it up. And results are there, good results are there. Now suddenly, if my friend comes to me and he suddenly, you know, hey, you this, by joking, he said this to me, And then immediately he knows, Buddha doesn't say this, he says, sorry. This is the thing that happens. And if you stop using these languages, automatically your mind also changes. Because what you think in deep inside, the anger is there, anger has to be expressed in something, you use all these harsh languages. Stop using this. Buddha says, it's not good. If you think it is not good, if you think the result is not good, if you think the impression that it creates is not good, then why do you do it? Now, if you keep on constantly doing this, then you come to a meditation retreat like this, and then you keep on complaining, Vivek, I don't know why this is coming. So you created this impression, don't create it. And that is why, if you start practicing this, the Buddha says, you can meditate much better. As we said, Shila, Samadhi, Panya. Shila is the foundation. These are part of Shilas. Morality. So keep on watching your speech. And then the mental action. There are three mental actions. One is all the time thinking about greed all the time. Wanting to have this, wanting to have lustful, wanting to have all kinds of things which you don't need. All this possessive mind. Now this possessive mind will rest in the material accumulation. And then, give you one example. How many shirts do you need? 3, 4, 5, 6? Alright, all with all the excuses, 10 shirts. But then how much do you have in your cupboard? Usually in my life, I've always used 2 shoes. One shoe for my, I go for meetings and all this. So one formal shoe, black shoe, polished. And another shoe, sports shoe, casual shoe. And some excuses, you have one slipper. All right. I've never had 3 or 4 shoes in my life. Always 2 shoes. Once this shoe is broken, cannot repair, then of course I buy a new shoe. Otherwise, I always stick to 2 shoes. Now this guy who has only 2 shoes all his life marries a Thai wife. And hardly I will have 2 or 3, maximum 2-3 shirts, maximum, that's all. Or 2-3 pants, that's all I had all my life like this. Now, when I married my wife, she decided now I move to Ladakh and to stay. Of course, now we are married, so we have to live with Vivek. So she went home to bring her things, and she came back. I went to the airport to receive her. Boxes of things! I was so happy. I thought, so many gifts for the family, so many gifts for the relatives. Very happy. So we packed all this there, boxes. I don't know how many kilos were extra kilos. And then she came home, started opening the boxes. I was so surprised. 3 boxes or something, they were full of shoes. Full of shoes. This boot is from Hong Kong, this boot is from Singapore, this boot is this leather, this boot is that leather. And until now, she has not wear these shoes. I don't know, what are you going to do with those shoes? Greed all the time. And I've seen the habit of the mind. When you start developing greed all the time, then the mind gets habituated. Now you go, as soon as you see a shoe in a shopping mall, you say, ah, nice shoe. Vivek, can I buy this? We have so many shoes back home, and you want one more shoes. All the time the greed starts coming. If you stop saying, if you can differentiate between what you need and what you want, you are much more peaceful. Otherwise, now once in a while, she has to always clean the shoe, maintain it. For what? Not to wear it, but just to maintain it. Unnecessary problems. And there is fear, now in Ladakh it's very dry, so this boot is very expensive boot, like 20,000 or whatever it is. If it is dry, it will break, or it will spoil, or worms, or whatever it will happen. All these fears are there. But of course, she changed. Marrying this person, simple person. And after like 1 year, 2 years, we started going to Thailand. And she bought very simple, like Indian shoe, like me there outside. And of course, the shoe was broken in Thailand, came out. And she said, well, I want to repair my shoe. The mother-in-law was shocked. She told us that never in her life she ever repaired a shoe. And now she's completely changed. Only two pairs of shoes. She's only changing that shoe and wearing this and repairing this and repairing this shoe. Changed. Good sign. Greed is coming down. So keep checking. If in the mind greed starts coming, identify. Oh, this is the greed. Look. Of course, you have to buy things what you need. But not all the time buying things which has no meaning. Many a times you buy things and suddenly you don't know what to do with these things. First you think I need it, and suddenly when you bring it at home, you don't know what to do with it. Most of the things, many things we just buy, we don't know what to do with it. And on the other hand, when you have greed, then you have to develop this mind, sharing. Sharing mind. If all the time greed comes, then you also develop this mind of sharing whatever you have. If you have 3 t-shirts, 4 t-shirts, if there's somebody who has no t-shirt, give one to him. This is how you start sharing. And the second one is all this hate in the mind. All this mind full of hate. Sometimes you look at somebody for no reason, you don't know this person, you're just full of hate. I don't like this person. You look at him, I don't know, but I hate this person, I don't like this person. This mind of hate. And this hate starts developing, and the biggest hate, I told you, is hate for yourself. And that's what it develops. So if any hate comes, you have to realize and say, oh no. If you have hate, then start observing. After all, what is this hate? And this hate is creating a very deep impression on the mind. Be careful. And that is why people keep on come. Now if you come to a retreat like this, now if you imagine, if you look to some people whom you know are full of hate, anger, imagine, you start thinking, oh, this person needs to meditate. Why? Because he's so full of anger, he doesn't know how to handle this. Why? Because the mind has become habituated to developing hate. One small thing happens, you can't stand it. This hate starts developing. And then you become miserable. So that is why Buddha says, don't do this. And the other one is, all the time, the mind of illusions, all the time. This mind of I. I'm so important. This ego works at 3 levels. One ego is, you keep on thinking, I'm superior than anybody. This is the big ego. I'm more important than anybody else. Another ego says, oh no, I'm the worst of everybody. Inferiority complex. Very low. Everybody is great. I'm the worst person. Again, that is ego. Illusion. And then another illusion is, oh no, I'm equal with everybody. This playing with this illusion of this I, keep on understanding, it only builds up this ego all the time. Whenever there is a big ego of superiority, inferiority or neutral, you keep on checking and say no. Because you will keep fighting just for this ego. You will create troubles just because of this ego. You give up the ego and then see. If somebody says something to you, the ego gets hurt. And if you are a meditator, of course, we are not enlightened. We are meditators, of course. But ego is still there. We are not fully cut off the ego. The hate is there. So ego is bound to be there. Somebody says something to you, immediately you start reacting. Then immediately go back. Hey, look, what am I doing? In meditation, you have to keep on constantly checking. Now, these 10 actions, Buddha says, are not good. Now, let's look at from a meditative standpoint. Let's see if this happens, how to act. Supposing you started thinking negative in the mind, forgetting all about the meditation, you are not aware, and suddenly you are full of greed or hate or ignorance or whatever it is. Try to come back to yourself and say, hey, look, full of anger is there. Let me just observe. Now let's say because you were not aware, you became so boiling inside with hate or anger, whatever, verbal level. It came at the verbal level. You shouted at somebody, then at least come back at this verbal level. order, doesn't matter. You shouted at somebody, action happened, doesn't matter. But there should not be remorse or regrets. Of course, awakening should be there. Oh no, look how I've reacted. Come back at the verbal level, at least. Now let's say you are not aware, anger was there, shouted, and you punched somebody's nose. Action happened. Then at least come back at the physical action level. You've done this action, now what? You can't take back the action, say, oh, I punched you, I want to take back the punch. You can't say this. Happened, doesn't matter. Now come back. At least now look at yourself. This is how you constantly keep on checking. And if you constantly keep on checking, then Buddha says, you are developing this positive mind. Otherwise, full of negativity all our life, we keep on developing hate, anger, jealousy, this either at physical level, mental level, verbal level, all the time this action keeps jumping here, keeps jumping there. If you understand this, then you will not develop. And the other thing is, Buddha says there are 10 wonderful qualities that you can develop. And the first and the foremost first quality, the good quality that creates a very deep impression on the mind, positive impression on the mind, that helps you on your path, that helps you in your life, that helps you in your meditation, the Buddha says, is dana. Dana means generosity. Understand this, not many people do understand the real meaning of this generosity, dana, sharing, all the time sharing. What is the sharing? Buddha says this is one of the perfections also, that you must perfect the kind of giving. What is this giving? Of course, giving should start at the material level. Sharing must start at the material level, because without starting from the basic sharing, how can you go up and develop in the sharing? At the material level, in the Buddhist economics, Buddha says, supposing if you earn 100 rupees, let's say 100 shekels, we are in Israel. If you are earning 100 shekels, of course, 25% of your 100 shekels you use for yourself. For your good, for your this, for your whatever your welfare is, fulfill your needs, whatever it is, for your food and all this. 25% you give it to your relatives, your family, spend it for the family and everybody. And 25% Buddha says, invest in your business. Or invest it, save it in the bank or whatever, do whatever it is. 25% Buddha says, save. Then the Buddha says, the next 25% is not for you. The last 25% you give it to others. Share with others. This is the mind, this is how the Buddha says, this sharing should start at this level. And when you start developing this mind of sharing, as soon as you start, let's say you want to do some material sharing, then before even sharing, when you have this mind, you should be very happy. You should be very happy to share. First of all, even the thought should be very happy thought. Ah, I want to share. And then, while giving it, you must be very happy. And then after giving it, you should be also very happy. Otherwise, what you give, what you share, the impression that creates in the mind, not very strong. You have to know this, then only there is a great benefit in sharing, because you're sharing whatever you have, sacrificing, renouncing. In Buddhist tradition, it is a very common practice that you keep on dana, doing all these donations and all. You go to temple, you do some donation, you go to this place, you do some donation. This is a very common practice. And not only that, we say that when you think of sharing, now your also time is coming, when you think of sharing, the first thought that comes, I will share this much, you must stick to that one. And let's say, I have in mind, I'll donate 100 shekels. Let's say the first thought came to you, I will share 100 shekels. Then, as soon as you have this positive mind, the mind will start calculating. Oh, no, I will do lesser. I think 100 is too much. I did this too late. Oh, this calculation starts, but as soon as you have a thought in the mind, You have to stick to that. And in our tradition we say, once you have that thought, you plus one on it. Let's say I want to, suddenly I went to this temple and then there was so much of mind of sharing, and then I say, I want to give 100 shekels. And then you give 100 shekels plus 1 shekel. That, the meaning is what? That I will keep continued sharing. That is the meaning. Not that you share one time and you forget all about the sharing. Oh no. This 1 shekel that you put extra means that for the rest of your life, you will keep on continue sharing, sharing, sharing with others. So, and when you share, you have a thought, you share with others. And after you share, you should not think on calculating, oh no, I did too much. I gave too much. If you do that, you don't get any benefit out of it. While giving, if you are happy, the benefit is there. After giving, if you are happy, the benefit is there. Otherwise, what happens? If you start first thinking and then thinking, oh no, I shouldn't do this, then there's no benefit. After giving, while giving, you are very happy. But after giving, you start thinking, oh no, I should have not given this much. Then again, there is no benefit. So this is how you start developing. But Buddha says, sabba danam dhamma danam jinati. That means what? Of all the sharings, the sharing of Dhamma is the greatest Dhamma. Remember this. What is Dhamma? Dhamma means if somebody is in a big trouble, he's very sad, he's having a difficult time, then say a few words that will help him. If you have learned some meditation, you have practiced something that helps you, then share this with these people. That is, Buddha says, is the greatest sharing. That is what I'm trying to do. Not that I'm a great guru and enlightened master. Trying to share whatever little thing I have. And the greatest sharing is sharing when you don't have. When you don't have, and whatever you have, whatever little thing you have, you share within that, that has a great value. If you have too much, there is ego, you just say, oh, I give this one. It has no value. The value should come from within. Then the second good quality to practice is Shila, morality. We talked about it. The 5 wonderful qualities to develop in the life. Remember, this can change your whole life. At the age of 14, the first thing in the monastery that I learned was these 5 things. Not to kill, not to steal, not to have any sexual misconduct, not to lie, and not to take any intoxicating thing. This is the 5 things that I learned in the monastery at the age of 14. And this changed my whole life. I'm so grateful to this monastery that I received this teaching. As soon as I learned these 5 things, the first thing I remembered was my father. My father is a Buddhist. And as soon as I learned, oh, you should not drink any intoxicating alcohol, these, that, drugs and all that. Suddenly I remembered my father. I thought, what a miserable father. My father used to drink all his life, and in the evening when he comes back, he keeps shouting at the whole village, you all are stupid, you this, I am this, I am this. He kept on shouting, and we were 3 children. All the 3 children, very poor, all those days, didn't even eat enough food to eat. We used to wait for our father to come and bring some leftover food for us, and he is fully drunk and fallen somewhere on the street, and we used to go pick him up and bring home, and then share whatever the food he has got. Now, when I received this, I was so concerned about my father, and then I, in a very broken English, those days, I didn't know very good English, so in a very broken English, I wrote some letter to him, saying that you are a Buddhist, but now I realize you are not a Buddhist, because you are not practicing even 5 things. And I know you are drinking, that is not Buddhist. And of course, in the village, nobody knows English, but in our neighbor, one person knows some broken English. So this broken English letter was taken to this person who knows some broken English. And of course, he started reading this letter. He couldn't read much of the things that is mentioned in the first few sentences. But of course, the 5 things he understood. And then he tried to explain to my father, saying that, look, your son says this, you are not a Buddhist. If you are a Buddhist, then you should be practicing these 5 things. He never knew these things in his life. It's because as a born Buddhist, you assume you know everything. Then my father, as soon as he read this letter, he completely gave up drinking. And he changed his whole life. And then he was so proud in the village, he kept his head high, and then he went on saying, my son changed my life. He kept on saying, that was his practice. He kept on saying, my son wrote me this book in English and he has understood something now. I changed my life. And until he died, he never took any drinking, any intoxicating. He became such a wonderful person. And before he died, 2 days before he died, he said that in about 2 days, I'm going to die. So he was in the hospital, my sister was there, of course I was not there. So for 2 days before he died, he kept on speaking to my sister, you do this, you do this, you do this. You have to manage the land, this thing, you deal with these people like this, this is the social duties, this duty, that duty. He tried to explain, and then he tried to explain about my brother. The brother, he should be like this, give him this land, that land, and all kinds of things. Just before he died, he had one sentence for this son also, because I am also his son. Nothing in the last, all these hours, he was speaking the whole time, nothing for me. Just before he died, he said one sentence to my sister, and of course she told me this. And all he had to say about this person was, don't worry about Vivek, he knows what he is doing. When you get the Dharma, you don't start worrying. You don't get Dharma, you start worrying all the time. My father was so worried because my sister, my brother didn't know any Dharma. What meditation, what Dharma? Nothing. Only faith, devotion, something happens, faith to the spirit. This is morality. Keep on practicing. I tell you, if you practice this, Buddha says it's like a perfume. Inner perfume. This external perfume that you put here and here and whatever here, when the wind blows, then you can feel it. I can feel, some of you. The wind blows, wonderful smell is there. What this perfume is that perfume is there. But if you practice morality, Buddha says this is like an inner perfume. Even it goes against the wind, whether there is wind this way or that way, you can feel this. The power of this is the real purity. You can feel a person who is practicing these five precepts, I tell you, you can feel the energy. It is so wonderful. You just want to sit with this person. So you keep on trying to develop this, Buddha says, morality. It's a very good thing. Keep on developing as much as you can. It's not a commandment. It's a free choice. If you cannot practice all the five, at least one. Take one. And then meditation, Buddha says, another wonderful quality. Keep on practicing meditation. Do one course at least once in a year. Not like a ritual or rite or ritual. Oh, once in a year, meditation retreat, time to go. Not like this. Consciously, with full awareness, you go once in a while, do this retreat, and then keep on practice every day, little by little. Tomorrow we'll elaborate on how to practice it. But try to develop this. This is a wonderful quality, the Buddha says. And the other quality is reverence and respect for others. This is one of the greatest things we are missing today. Whatever the person may be, none of us are equal. We are not same. We are all different individuals. We are all in a different world. We have our own mind. It's a different world in itself. You can never compare saying that I'm better than this person is better than this person. You can never compare. Why? Because the things that I have inside, the qualities that I have, you don't have. And the qualities that you have, I don't have. Maybe I can teach some meditation. But if there is a doctor here, I am not a doctor. I'm very ignorant. If something happens, I don't know how to diagnose it. Respect everybody for whatever this person is. There's a story. Suddenly, there used to be a congregation in the church every day, and slowly people started going away, and suddenly in the church there was nobody. And then the priest became very worried. He thought, why these people are not coming to the church? And, he went to this sage and he says, look, there's nobody, people now, slowly people are going away, not coming to the church. And the saintly person is, he said, well, the Buddha is within you. Amongst you, the Buddha is there. So that means one of you is the Buddha. In your church, one of you is the Buddha. Hey, who is this Buddha? This person, this priest goes back and starts thinking, one of us is the Buddha? Who is this Buddha? And he starts thinking, are you the Buddha? Is he the Buddha? And you start thinking, maybe Buddha has disguised himself as this person, that person, this person, that person. And he started, because you can't say who is this Buddha, so he started respecting everybody who came to the church, saying, oh, he must be the Buddha, who knows, he must be the Buddha. And likewise starting developing respect, regards for others, then everybody becomes a Buddha. Start developing this wonderful quality. If a senior person is there, respect for whatever he is, for his age, for his experience, whatever it is. This respect was there before, and if it is in some of the Western countries, you have lost it. We still respect the elderly people, whatever the age is, still respect. Respect has to be there. If you don't respect, again the ego starts playing the game. If you start respecting, then you won't have problem with people. You won't judge people like this, you don't judge people like this. Just respect for whatever he is or she is. Life becomes much more better, and the impression that you create in the mind is immense. Another wonderful quality is service. Buddha says, keep on service, serving others. During a retreat like this, it's a wonderful occasion to give your services, and you know, the whole retreat here is happening because people are serving. I very highly admire the people who have come here to serve. Because in Dhamma House, we are also serving. But I know how much of commitment is there, and here I see how much of commitment, togetherness, this teamwork is there. So much of commitment is there. More commitment probably than doing things at home. I see more commitment here than at home. Everybody is so concerned, everything is okay in life. This service is very important, it's very helpful in life. Try to make use of your life to serve others whenever and wherever possible. Little or more, doesn't matter. But try to serve. Whenever you get an opportunity, serve. Another wonderful quality is whenever you do something good, when you meditate, when you share something, then you have to dedicate. In a Buddhist tradition, actually this bell, we use it. Let's say if I meditate for 1 hour, when I ring the bell, it has a meaning. The meaning is, supposing if I'm meditating and then I ring the bell, all the people in the vicinity starts to understand, oh, somebody is meditating, purifying, developing the mind. So he will say, sadhu, 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 3 times. Sadhu, sadhu means what? Excellent, excellent, wonderful. I also share in this wonderful practice. I also share in this wonderful quality. This is what is the meaning of sharing. So whenever you do wonderful things, you have to close your eyes and say, whatever benefit I get from this wonderful practice, I share it with everybody. Not that you have to carry a bell everywhere and you do this wonderful thing and you say, tang, who knows. But this is a practice that you do inside your mind. You just share. You say, if I have benefited from this practice in any way, I would like to share this with everybody. So you have to share. Don't keep it to yourself. Keep on sharing. This is a wonderful quality, the Buddha says. And the next quality is, if somebody is doing wonderful practices, is developing the mind, is making progress in meditation, is making progress in life, then you have to rejoice in his progress. Another big problem today. Very difficult to rejoice in others' progress. Always people want to pull others' legs. As a meditator, you start rejoicing. If somebody makes progress in any aspect, you rejoice in this. I have a friend in India, very industrialist guy. We were sitting, his factory is here, and then his friend's factory, the huge factory. And then suddenly his friend's factory made an expansion, and the boiler, you know the boiler in factories, a smoke came through his new boiler. And my friend who was sitting in his factory, he clapped. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I became very skeptical. I thought, how can he be so happy to see his friend making so much progress when the factory is next to each other? I became very skeptical and I felt that the club was not a genuine club. So the next day I asked him, look, yesterday when you clapped, Was that a genuine clap? Were you really rejoicing in your friend's progress? He was very honest. He told me, Vivek, I'm very sorry. Inside, I was boiling with jealousy. I was so full of anger and jealousy. And I've had this for the last 20 years. They started the factory together. And for so long, he's been having so much of jealousy, seeing he's making more progress. And just because I've been there teaching him to rejoice in others, he clapped to show me that he's practicing. Good, this is one step. He realized at least to rejoice. Likewise, we also have to keep on rejoicing in others' benefits. Otherwise, it doesn't help. And then another quality of the Buddha says is keep on hearing such Dhamma talks like this. If there is a Dhamma talk somewhere, some teacher is coming to give a talk, you must rush there. Go and take, listen to this. Why? It helps you. Supposing you are practicing meditation and you are very low, down, nothing seems to be working, and then suddenly if you listen to a Dhamma talk like this, it is like charging your batteries. Your battery has run out, go to this Dhamma talk, recharge your batteries. And then what happens? You can continue this mind of pure mind. It helps you. Wherever you get an opportunity, just take this opportunity, whenever you get this opportunity to hear Dhamma. Because this Dhamma, you can't hear every day on the television. The Dhamma is the only thing which is not on television. Rest everything is on television. So that is why, make use of it. Buddha says this is a wonderful quality here. And the other thing is, if you know some Dhamma, then you start teaching others. This is another great quality. Another great quality in this teaching is, there was a monk during Buddha's time also. He practiced meditation after meditation, nothing seems to work. He's not being enlightened. What happened? Buddha told him, go and teach. As soon as he started teaching, he realized and became enlightened. So, if you're not enlightened now, go start teaching. Who knows? Whatever little thing you know, share with others, teach. This is what the Buddha says is a wonderful quality. Another wonderful quality is whenever you see that your friend is having all this wrong idea about the self, about life, all negativity about life, all very pessimistic about life, then try to correct his views. Hey, look, I think the way you're thinking, how about try this way to think? Life is so wonderful. Try this way, try that way. Trying to straighten his views, that is a wonderful quality, the Buddha says. So these are the wonderful qualities. If you keep on developing, then your meditation is progressing. Otherwise, you sit however long you sit, it does not work unless you take Shila with you, unless you take Samadhi with you, and then only Panya comes. So all this, the middle part, Shila, Samadhi, Panya, has to be practiced continuously. And that is a lifelong practice. It's a lifelong journey, the Buddha says. So keep on practicing. You have one more day tomorrow. Tomorrow, whatever the group sittings is there, we do this very strong determination that you will not move during the group sitting. Whatever difficulties come, you will not open your legs, you will not open your hands, you will not move here, not move there, do or die. Of course, you have been doing do or die until now. But tomorrow, extra strong determination that you will not open your legs or hands no matter what happens. Right? So tomorrow is the last day for your serious practice, and the day after tomorrow, of course, you are free. Before we end, I just want to clarify some of the questions. There's one question I would like to you to talk more about education. Well, I can't talk about education right now, but one thing is there, the question is extended to how to, can a child be taught meditation? Of course, why not? Buddha's son was taught meditation when he was 7 years old. And that's why Buddha says that at the age of seven, in the Buddhist tradition, at the age of seven, a boy or a girl can enter a monastery at the age of seven. Because Buddha says at the age of seven, they can learn meditation. So usually in our society, if you want to teach your children, you have to teach them very playfully about the five precepts. Start with this morality. Shila, foundation has to be there. And to learn this, to teach children morality, I tell you, it's one of the greatest fun you can have. You will learn from the children, and you can teach children first morality, and of course, then you can slowly start teaching them just breathing meditation. That's all. Just breathing meditation. And don't be surprised that the child might be much better ahead of you in meditation than you. It happens. In Burma, in Thailand, there are cases where there are young boys like 13, 12, 13, 14 years of age. They sit 1 hour without moving, even a slight move. And here we are fidgeting about all the time, here, there. So it works with children. You can try slowly, but don't force them. You don't force the children. You sit in meditation, but the best way to teach children is you become example. When you sit, let them also sit together. And let them sit for 1 or 2 minutes and let them go away. My son, he has a picture book, and there is two pictures. One is the mother is on the laptop. The picture, the children see it. And then there is the father, like this, meditation picture. And as soon as my wife says, "Hey, Anon, meditation," he'll do like this. And then as soon as he sees my laptop, he says, "Busy, busy." Children pick up very fast. You can try some experiments. What do I do if I wish a person to feel bad? Why do you want to let that person feel bad anyway? I know that it's wrong, but that's the truth. Well, you always ask yourself, do I want to feel bad, and do I want that somebody make me feel bad? If you say no, then don't let others feel bad also. It does not help. It harms the other person. It harms yourself also. Well, this is a long question. If love is illusionary, why is compassion real? When you see someone for the first time, you don't know them. So they have come. You see, there is a big difference between love, conditional love, and unconditional love and compassion. If the love is just at the surface level, then if you are expecting so much in return, I love you because you have to love me, this is conditioned love, it is not pure love. But if the love is just love without any expectation, then this is pure love. So if you can think about it, and compassion is, we call karuna in Buddha's language. Compassion is whenever you see somebody in problem, your heart just goes out all the way to help, and you wish this person come out of his difficulties, come out of his problems. And if you have meditated, if you have come out of it, you know that experience, then you try to make a deep wishes, may he or she also come out. Even the biggest, so-called the biggest enemy, the most unwanted person if you have in your life, I tell you, during a retreat, if you practice seriously this compassion, the hate completely disappears. I'm talking from experiences, not just the philosophy of something that is never happens. No. It happens, so keep on developing. I think that's enough with your question. And the rest you can talk to me on Friday. You've asked some things about Pali translation or whatever. If the thoughts that arise in meditation come from past impression, is the content of our dreams the same? What does Buddhism say about dreams? Well, Buddhism does talk about dreams. Your thoughts that comes in the mind is not just about past impressions. It is past, of course, present conditions, and also of the future planning. So it has all to do with three times. But as you start to meditate, when you stop reacting, when you start dissolve all those thoughts of the present moment, then of course things of the past, which is there, starts coming up. So thought is not just about the past, it's also of the future and also of this present condition. And the other thing is, of course, there are 7 kinds of dreams mentioned in one of the Buddhist texts. And we talk about dreams, like some dreams also is a manifestation of your past thoughts. You can see in your dreams your past, whatever happened or something. And one dream, let's say you have a very strong dream during the day, I mean just before you woke up, and suddenly now the whole day you are thinking, then we say that this dream has some meaning. What is that meaning? That you will like to consult somebody, what's the meaning of this dream, then that dream carries some message. And the Buddhistic belief is that the deities or the whatever the gods, plural gods, if they want to tell you something, then they speak to you through your dreams, they say. So there are some description about dreams in Buddhism. If you want more detail, there is a book called Questions of King Milinda. It's a book where they've given some details about dreams in Buddhism. You don't answer my question last night, sorry. I will repeat it, okay. Isn't there a danger when practicing meditation in this manner where there is one mind telling the other unbehaved mind what to do to create even more deep dualistic state? Well, I don't know whether there's two, three minds or one mind. But one thing is for sure. When you start meditating like this, there is only benefits, no danger whatsoever. You are not moving to a dualistic state, you are going beyond dualistic. Dualism. That means what? Why do we keep on saying observe? That means when the mind remains balanced, you don't lose the balance of your mind, then you can remain always smiling. Otherwise, if you are reacting all the time, at times you smile, at times you keep on complaining, at times you smile, at times you keep... And as you start to understand, you go beyond dualities. And that is where you don't lose, you remain equal. Now, what is the meaning in real life? Sometimes in life there is loss, there is gain, there is name, there is defame, whatever it is. When you go up and down in life, then you can remain the balance. You don't become so sad when you lose something, or you don't become so full of attachment when something happens. So to maintain the balance, this meditation helps. And if you practice like this in a meditation retreat like this, you go deeper, so you know the real this observing takes place at a deeper level, and then it manifests in real life much better. So don't worry, meditation, there's no danger. Only benefits. You don't believe me? Keep trying. I've talked to you about it a bit, but I'm wondering how to... Okay, determination. Since somebody is very lazy, you see, tomorrow we are going to do some determination practice. So I told you, you do or die tomorrow, and then if you still cannot do it, send a note again. Vivekananda. Oh, by the way, I'm only Vivek now. Because when I had my son, my wife said, now you must give him something. You're the father. And my wife said, all right, how about give your name? I said, yes, I can share my name with him. So I've given Ananda to my son. I'm only Vivek. He has taken my name. I don't know what else he's going to take as the days passes. How does a fly sit on my nose purify sankharas? I can understand it about pain that comes from the muscles, but not about sensation that happened because of here and now conditions. Well, thanks to the flies. Flies test your patience. Flies test always your patience in meditation. First of all, they come and sit on you. At times you feel like... I'll give you one example. Once my sister came for a group sitting like this in Dhamma House. And there was a fly, you know, constantly coming on our face. And she knew that Vivek says, don't react, just observe. She was thinking in her mind, I will just smack this fly. You know, she was thinking like this. If at all I was not in this meditation sitting, poor fly, I would have smashed you. She was thinking like this. And this happens here also. You see, when a fly comes, you're creating sankharas at that moment. Not that you're purifying the sankharas of the past, but you're creating sankharas. Now the fly is testing your observing power. So the fly is very clever. He comes at this stage, very good. Probably if it comes on the first or second day, you might complain, what this fly, somebody walks out of the meditation hall, there's a fly, I can't meditate. But anyway, six, 7 days passes, doesn't matter, fly comes, it gives you a test whether you can observe or not. And flies, when they walk on your face, it is not pleasant. It's very like, you know, you feel like really pushing your hand up like this. But anyway, when this happens, you start observing it, don't react, whatever, however difficult it may be. Only when it is so disturbing that you feel so frustrated, obsessed by it, then of course, take a slight, small action like this, but don't go smashing like this. If you smash, then you get smashed. But if you do this, you are still observing. Is vipassana to be regarded as a psychological therapy to be taken when as felt needed, or is it periodical practice required as or very difficult? But anyway, I'm trying to understand that vipassana is not something psychological. You can take it psychological, of course, in one way you can call it a psychological, because I do have a few psychological friends, psychologists, and whenever I talk to them, they tell me, Vivek, you are really a psychologist. I've never studied psychology, I don't know what psychology is, but anyway, they keep telling me psychologist. So probably meditation may be a part of psychology. But remember, meditation is not something like a medicine that you give, oh, you have some problem, so you do this. It's not something like a medicine that you do and things will go away. This meditation has to be practiced whether or not you have problem. Because if you have a problem, then if you apply meditation only to overcome this problem, then it doesn't work. Because meditation is not to get rid of this problem or that problem. Meditation is to purify the mind. Once you purify the mind, whether you like it or not, all the other problems starts going away. So you don't have to worry about it. So I would say that meditation is more like a lifelong therapy to come out of all these impurities and to purify the mind. It's a lifelong journey, keep on practicing, and you will see the results in daily life. If you don't see the results in daily life, probably there is something wrong with the practice. Could you please tell the yogis right after the talk that there is a surprise in the dining hall? So I've read it. Could you, there is a surprise waiting for all of us in the dining hall. Alright? So just before we go, shall we all sit down for a few minutes? Is yourself smiling and happy that you completed sixth day of the retreat? You're trying your best, feel yourself very fortunate that you're giving all your effort into it, trying to understand, trying to develop the mind, trying to purify the mind. And feel yourself very happy, see yourself smiling. May I always remain happy. May I keep on practicing, and keep on developing. May I be free from all difficulties, of all problems, of all confusions. And may I enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness. Real peace, real happiness. As your teachers, see them smiling, happily sharing their experiences, guiding you through the retreat. May my teachers always remain happy. May they be free from all difficulties, whether physical or mental. And may they keep on sharing. May they also enjoy real peace, real happiness. Real peace, real happiness. Visualize all the yogis sitting in this hall, like Dhamma brothers and sisters, practicing together, exploring this mind together. May all of you enjoy real peace. May all of you come out of your difficulties, come out of your problems. And may all of you keep on practicing for your own good and for the good of others. As all the Dharma workers who are serving you, making sure that you are comfortable so that you can focus on your meditation, see them smiling, happily sharing their services with you. May all our Dhamma workers always remain happy. May they be free from all difficulties, of all confusions, and may they also keep on developing, keep on purifying, and may they also enjoy real peace, real happiness, real peace, real happiness. Not only the people, all the beings within this area, visible, invisible beings, may all living beings be happy and well. May all living beings come out of their difficulties, come out of their problems, and may they also enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness. Real peace, real happiness. Keep on practicing, make best use of this wonderful opportunity. Every moment, make use of this.